Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson Show. She is an author, and she wrote Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th commandment that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no-whining world of January Jones.
Now let me ask you a question. Do you remember the first time you saw the movie The Wizard of Oz? I certainly remember, and I'm sure you do too. Would you like to learn more about translating the magic of Oz into your life today? Have you ever wanted to know how you can become a leader just like Oz? Can you imagine creating a new career future for yourself today as we speak? Tell me, do you know what it's like to start throwing seats off the bus? Doesn't that sound like fun? Have you ever heard about a book called The Leader of Oz? Or better yet, would you like to meet someone who has some of the answers that we're looking for? Now, are you ready to learn how to be successful? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, then you are in the right place, and I would like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Today, I will be introducing you to my guest, who is a success coach extraordinaire. He has been on my show before, and he will provide us with wonderful, informative, and inspirational lessons and some really, really great advice for all of us. I'm pleased to announce that this show is now live on Talk4Media and syndicated on iHeartRadio with 50 million listeners and Blog Talk Radio, with our show having 1.8 million listeners to date. We are archived 24/7 for your listening pleasure. Also, LinkedIn has announced that my profile was one of the top 5% most viewed during 2012. Now, let me tell you about my guest today. He has been on the show before, and he has spent the last 30-plus years in marketing, program management, leadership, organizational development, courseware development, and teaching experience for industries spanning from heavy equipment to high tech. He is currently a senior partner with Magna Leadership Solutions based in Phoenix, Arizona. I am pleased to welcome to the show again Dr. Kevin Gazzara. Hi, Dr. Kevin. How are you today?
Terrific, January, and thank you so much for the opportunity to be on your show again. I've been looking forward to this.
Oh, I have too. It's always wonderful to have you with us. You have so many inspirational and informative lessons to share. Let's talk a little bit about your own personal success story. Could you share with my listeners where you were born and who your early mentors in life were?
I'd be delighted to. Well, I was born and raised in Levittown, Pennsylvania, and I lived in the Philadelphia area, went to school in the Philadelphia area. For probably the first 32 years of my life. Mm-hmm. And then in 1992, I transitioned over into Phoenix, and I've lived here in Phoenix for the last 21 years of my life. And it's been a wonderful journey.
Oh, yes. Now, when you look back on your success story, who was your first mentor?
Well, I'd have to say my father. You know, certainly I came from a fantastic family with a great support system. My dad was a brilliant artist. He did sculptors. He was a sculptor. He did oil paintings, landscapes, portraits. You know, so from a very early age, I understand the value of creativity. You know, and I'd say, you know, my very first mentor in my family was certainly my dad.
Mm-hmm. And then outside your family, who influenced you the most? Were there any teachers that or coaches or friends that influenced you?
Well, I'd have to say that I was very fortunate in my life after I graduated from undergraduate school to move into several positions where I had some amazing managers and leaders. And many of those managers and leaders not only became my mentors, but became close friends as well. And when I worked for Transamerica Corporation for 10 years, I had some amazing managers who became my friends. In fact, the one mentor who became a mentor started out as my manager, ended up being my best man at my wedding, and we have stayed in touch for the last 35 plus years.
Oh, wow. That's a good history together, isn't it? You've transitioned now from 28 years in corporate America to management consulting. How did this happen, and how did this come about? And what advice do you have for others who are thinking about transitioning or changing their positions?
Well, first of all, it's been a fantastic transition. It's something that I had planned for. You know, when I worked for Transamerica De Laval right outside of Princeton, New Jersey, for about 10 years, I spent most of my time in marketing and management, business development there. And then I had a great opportunity in 1989 to take a position with Intel. And and that was probably one of the significant inflection points for me. And I moved from heavy equipment into computers, digital video. I learned an incredible amount there. I spent, you know, just a little bit over 18 years at Intel. And the big advantage of being with Intel or with any large company is it gives you opportunities to move around. So I did some marketing, I did some management, I managed product lines. But the last 6 years I spent doing managing their program management for their worldwide leadership programs around the world, where we did 2,500 managers and leaders in 10 different countries. And when I had left Intel in 2007 to start the consulting business, Intel had just trained its 50,000th manager. So I got lots of frequent flyer miles.
I bet you did. Now, was this what kind of a decision was this for you to leave Intel and to go out on your own?
Well, it was a conscious decision. I had a 15-year plan. So not a lot of people have that, but I would say I'm certainly a planner. And I had a personal goal to retire when I was 50 to start my second phase of life. And my second phase of life was really much more about giving back, continuing to teach, continuing to mentor, do executive coaching. But what I found over my career was that I love to teach. I love to help other people get better. So so that was really how everything transitioned. And I left Intel. Intel was a fantastic place to work. I have nothing but excellent things to say about it. They really set me up for success. And I had a wonderful mentor at Intel as well for almost 15 years, a woman by the name of Cecilia Lodico. And in fact, she and I still stay in touch to today. And you know, one message I want to tell people is, you know, getting a mentor and having a plan and having a kind of a vision out there is really essential to kind of long-term success.
Well, that's, you know, my next question was going to be, what advice do you have for others considering a transition? And so many of my guests have stressed how important it has been to have mentors in their life. And I think, as you've just addressed it, this is something people have to really think about and consider doing. Don't you agree?
I would agree. When I got my mentor at Intel, so mm-hmm. for the advice that you're looking for, Intel did not have a mentoring program, but I had recognized early on in my career the value of that. In fact, Cecilia and I were mentors for, she was my mentor for 6 years, and I remember getting a call from her one day saying that she wanted to terminate her mentoring agreement with me, that she couldn't let it go on any longer. And uh-huh. I was startled, and
yeah.
she said, I want to terminate this because I want to hire you for you to develop the mentoring program for Intel. And what she had was, I had essentially a six-year plan. I had a six-year trial interview to essentially, she wanted me to do what I had done with her. And uh-huh. we rolled that into a mentoring program for HR. Eventually, it moved into Intel. And we were fortunate enough in 2002 to have Fast Company write a six-page article on mm-hmm. the good work that we had done. But getting a as far as advice, getting a mentor or a coach is, I think, absolutely essential to long-term success.
Oh, yeah, and we hear this, I'm hearing this more and more on the show, and I hope our listeners will get the message. You can't do it alone, and, you know, the bottom line here, Kevin, is you don't want to go out and reinvent the wheel when there are people out there who will be more than happy to show you how to do the deal. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. You want to take advantage of their learning so that you can you don't have to fall as hard and as far.
And yeah.
you can take advantage of the things that they've learned and then make your own decisions. But having the person to help guide you is essential.
Oh, yeah. Very good advice. Terrific. You know, we're going to take a break and hear from my sponsors. And when we come back with Dr. Kevin Gazzara, we're going to talk about consulting and the activities that he has done, such as coaching and teaching, and how he sees being a portfolio employee working as an advantage to you. We'll be right back with Dr. Kevin Gazzara.
Second time around can be better. Second timers try harder. Looking to have a rewarding second marriage? Any marriage. Read Successful Second Marriages by Patricia Bubash. She interviews a variety of couples that have succeeded in their second attempt. Each story reflects that the second marriages can be tough going, yet be the best of the best. Learn from these couples who share their intimate stories, how they struggled with difficulty and have thrived. Stories such as, "Our kids drove us apart. We separated 5 times in 4 years. 4 months into our marriage, my 85-year-old father-in-law came to live with us. 1 year into our marriage, I was diagnosed legally blind. Death of my eldest child brought grief, depression into our new marriage." Successful Second Marriages is encouraging, hopeful, inspiring. Available on Amazon.com in book form and ebook. Read Pat's musings at www.successfulsecondmarriages.com.
Nicholas Hazel is a senior member of the Association of Applied and Therapeutic Humor and author of Laughter, the Drug of Choice. Scientific research is discovering that our bodies only hurt when we don't laugh. For anyone interested in a laugh-out-loud collection of medical terms and poetical music, often at the expense of health professionals, love, and life, Laughter, the Drug of Choice, is just what the doctor ordered.
Welcome back with my wonderful guest, Dr. Kevin Gazzara. He is currently a professor at 4 U.S. universities and 1 international university, where he has regularly taught and developed classroom and online university courses in critical thinking, management, leadership, organizational behavior, marketing, and business strategy for undergraduate, graduate, and doctorate programs since 1996. Dr. Kevin, let's talk about this term portfolio employee. I have no idea what that means. Could you share that with us?
Certainly. Well, it was a new term to myself as well when I entered into the consulting world, leaving the corporate world. And a portfolio employee is someone that uses a whole series of multiple jobs in order to create a portfolio of their work and also generally their income.
Okay.
So as a portfolio employee, it's not just going to the 8-to-5 job every day where you do your accounting and you come home and you rinse and repeat every Monday through Friday. You know, portfolio employees today are ones that may be an artist for one company, may do some copywriting for a second, may do a little bit of acting for the third, and then they're writing their secret novel in the evenings as their fourth piece of their portfolio.
Well, we all know about those secret novels. Yeah. So a portfolio employee basically is someone who can do a little bit of anything and a lot of everything, and they've diversified and they've actually created different aspects to their career. It sounds like an exciting approach to competition.
Well, it's an exciting approach, but it's also a little bit scary. We've been taught for hundreds of years that you pick a profession, hire on to a corporation, and they take good care of you for 30 years, and then you retire and you play golf and you die.
Okay, gotcha.
Well, that has changed. That has drastically changed, and I think it's all for the better. And the ability of a portfolio worker, and I would certainly put myself as a portfolio worker, is because I wear many different hats, as you've already described, from teaching at a university to doing consulting to doing executive coaching to writing. And the advantage is it gives you the ability to be much more in control and for you to create the life that's the most rewarding for you, and you get to define the rewards, whether it's financial, whether it's personal, whether it's spiritual, but it gives you the ability to mix and match things as necessary. So you're much more in control of your time. The challenge is to be able to do that and make a living at it. And once you've figured out that formula, then pretty much the magic happens.
Oh, yeah. And that does sound like a magical description. And I think it's a very accurate description. The opportunity to wear different hats at different times in your life, in my opinion, gives people the opportunity to find their passion. And once you find your passion, magical things do happen. Don't you agree?
Yeah, and I would say that most lives in general are not linear ones. But I also believe that you need to go after what you believe your passion is as early as possible, but make sure that you don't have blinders on to see the things that are happening in real time as you're going down that yellow brick road of life.
That is good advice, because you just still have to eat. You have to pay the bills. You have to survive in this world. And a lot of people, when they're looking for their passions, we often talk about, just if you can't do it as a living, do it in your spare time or your part time, because it's amazing how doors just start opening and things start networking and connecting. Give us your thoughts on networking in today's competitive world.
Well, for networking, I think of anything that has been the key to my success, it's been my network. And one of the things that I had figured out early on in my life and my career, and I'd say a lot of this has to do with having great bosses and mentors and a terrific family, is that I had something that I called the 2% rule. And my 2% rule was that you should spend 2% of your time at all times doing networking and building your network. In fact, there's a wonderful tool in LinkedIn that will actually map your network for you.
Okay, that is great. And we've had many times on our show, I've had Jan Wallen come on the show, and she's a LinkedIn expert. And LinkedIn is one of those networks that I adore because it's kind of a network for serious people. Don't you agree?
Well, it is, and it's more valuable than I had even recognized. Can I give you a one-minute story?
Sure, love to hear it.
So here's a plug for social networking, although this is not intended to be a social networking interview. I recently took a position at Arizona State University to teach in their executive managements for sustainability leadership, and I asked them, how did you come to choose me? And the response was, well, if you go onto LinkedIn and you type in parameters such as leadership, online teaching, education, university experience, consulting, you type in a whole series of words. What I was told was your name pops up because, and we wanted someone local in the Phoenix area, and we use LinkedIn to help point us towards you. So here's a pitch here for making sure not only are you networking, but you're also building your network using social networks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's such great advice. And that's one of the best tips for a sustaining competitive advantage for people out there starting their careers, or for that matter, people who are already in their careers and they're kind of, you know, at a stalemate and they've kind of stalled. That'll get things going again.
Yeah, building your kind of sustainable competitive advantage or thinking of yourself as a product is very, very important in order to make sure that you are always positioned for success and you're positioned for new opportunities. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I end up coaching that have been forced into transition, whether the company has been downsized or their jobs have gone away or whatever it is, or there's been some personal or financial situation and they're forced into making a decision. And that is the time that they begin thinking about themselves as a product. And that is the wrong time. The time to be thinking about yourself as a product and the things that you have to build your sustainable competitive advantage, so what makes you different, is during the time when you are stable and you can think clearly. And too often it happens as a reaction rather than being proactive with it.
That's great advice. And what do you see for the future of leadership from your perspective as a management and leadership professor at four universities here in the U.S. and one internationally? What do you see for the future?
Well, leadership has been around forever, and it's probably one of the more studied and probably the least known as far as details on. And everyone has a different take on it. But what I see is the kind of emerging leadership for the 21st century is that we need to get better at understanding the nuances of leadership as it relates to different cultures. And as things have become more globally, this one-size-fits-all doesn't seem to work any longer. So taking a look at how we build our own leadership, our own management, from a national culture perspective, I would suspect or predict will be one of the big emergent leadership themes probably over the next 10 to 20 years.
Now, tell us what your thoughts are about the business trends with China, Asia, and so much is going on. Practically everyone I talk to who is in business is off to China to do something. Do you see that as a trend that's going to stay with us?
Well, as coming from Intel and spending a lot of time in Asia, as China in particular, many large corporations have moved over to there, obviously, for many great reasons. Terrific people. Cost of labor, resource availability. So I think that is going to continue. However, I want to pull in some of the work that I'm doing now with Arizona State University for sustainability, is we are starting to see, when you're looking at sustainability, you know, kind of balancing between the environmental conditions, economic conditions, social conditions, when things get out of balance in any country, that starts raising questions about the ability to grow at the rate that we've seen in the past. So so what happens is you grow very quickly into these emerging markets. Things grow probably a little quicker than necessary, and one or more of those elements get a little bit out of whack. And when that happens, people, I think, pull back and want to make sure that there is a balance in the system so that as you move to the other countries or to the other environments, that it is sustainable long term. Because short-term focus of kind of what has, I think, led the world, as well as the U.S. economy, into some substantial problems by having a what I would call a Wall Street mentality, was everything is just done on three-month windows, and you have to look longer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is terrific advice, great information, very inspirational. We'll be right back with Dr. Kevin Gazzara, and we're going to, when we come back, we're going to talk about his book, his website, how you can contact him, and we'll be right back.
Pam Evans has been married and divorced four times and lived to tell the tale with honesty, humor, and a heartfelt message. Check out Pam's first book, Ring Exchange, Adventures of a Multiple Marrier, where she shares her hard-won lessons about behavior, emotions, relationships, and her marriage partner choices. Learn more about Pam's road less traveled and how she anticipates every day with joy and a sense of gratitude. Visit Pam's website at www.ring-exchange.com. Her book is available on Amazon.com, too. Everyone deserves a happy life. Life is supposed to be fun. Your life is supposed to feel good, and you're meant to feel happiness in your life and to satisfy your dreams. And you can. Because the only reason anyone wants anything or does anything is that they think they will feel better in the having of it or the doing of it. They think they will feel better in the experiencing of it. Coming soon, a website where you can learn more on how you can have the life you deserve at afeelgoodworld.com.
Welcome back with my brilliant guest, Dr. Kevin Gazzara, and he is the co-author of a wonderful book called The Leadership of Oz. Dr. Kevin, could you share with my listeners where they can find your book and tell us a little bit about your website and what they'll find there?
I'd be delighted to. Well, the Leader of Oz was written in 2008. We did a second printing in 2010. I co-wrote that with my good friend and actually was a student of mine, Dr. Ali Lakhani. And the book is available on Amazon. It's available direct through theleaderofoz.com. It's on our consulting website, which is magnaleadership.com. And I believe it is distributed through Ingram worldwide, so you should be able to buy that anywhere hard copy, or I'd encourage you to buy it instantaneously on Kindle.
Okay. Oh, yes. That's what I'm addicted to. I take my Kindle with me everywhere. I was standing in line at the post office reading it the other day, and the other day I actually saw a gal out walking reading her Kindle. So it's a very positive addiction. Now, how long did it take you to write the book, The Leader of Oz, revealing 101 secrets of marvelous leadership for the 21st century?
Well, from start to finish, it took us 6 months, and that was an aggressive schedule. However, I think the one thing that we've learned as management leadership consultants is that you have to set deadlines, and we committed to speak at a conference in Las Vegas, so that we had a deadline, and we said we will be there with our book. So so you set the deadlines, and you work within the deadlines. So it gets you off your butt and gets you into gear.
Yeah. Now, so could you share a few of the secrets from this book? There's 101. So could you share a few with them?
Well, what we tried to do is we tried to provide things that were practical as well as things that were well-grounded in academics, because myself and my co-author, Dr. Lakhani, we were both leadership professors, and we started writing an academic book on leadership, but it was just so boring that we didn't even want to read it. So we said, why don't we do something fun that will actually get us some people reading it and using it as a model to help create a strong organization. So if I had to give you some tips, one of the things that we found as kind of the marvelous secrets, and you'll understand that when you read the book, is that we found that there are 10 leadership practices that make a difference for becoming a great leader. And they are communication, competence, stewardship, reinforcement, confidence, creativity, authenticity, vision, culture, and empowerment. And we recognize you can't do all of them, but picking the ones that are necessary for your environment and focusing on those rather than trying to do everything for everyone is really the key to becoming and being recognized as a great leader.
Wow, those are 10 terrific, practical, inspirational tips. Now, in your book, on this journey, you challenge your brain, heart, and nerve to gain wisdom as you create your own new land of Oz. Let's talk about nerve. What kind of nerve does it take?
Well, I think the biggest thing for a leader is, and the way that I define a great leader is that most leaders probably say no to more things than they say yes to. And you have to have the nerve, you have to have the conviction. If you look at those 10 leadership practices, having the confidence and the competence to be able to say no and to make the hard decisions of what you're not going to do. I think it's too easy for most leaders to continually add and continually stretch their employees beyond what is capable to the breaking point because they're not making the good decisions. And I think making the hard decisions of saying what we're not going to do is equally, if not more important, than saying the things that you are going to do.
And that certainly does take a lot of nerve, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And it makes you generally unpopular as a leader in the short term.
Short term, yeah, okay. But long term, it's probably definitely the way to go. Let's talk about heart. Lead the walk of mutual trust that aligns with the organization's core values and recognize others' authentic efforts that transcend self-interest. You've got to have heart. Wow. That's a difficult thing to find in a big organization sometimes, isn't it?
Well, I think corporations try to wean that out of you or beat it out of you. And I think if all of us think about the people that we have been attracted to as mentors, as coaches, as great leaders and people that we look up to, I don't think you'd find a single person that you would say in that group that didn't have heart. And having heart just means that you have the ability to connect personally and put yourself in other people's shoes so that when you're making the decision, that you feel the pain as much as they do.
Okay. I love that analogy to put yourself in other people's shoes. That definitely would help. As far as brain, gaining credibility, clear planning, problem solving, navigating obstacles, that is so important, isn't it?
Well, it's important, and a lot of people don't have a propensity for that. And I've been fortunate enough to work for fantastic managers and leaders that may not have had those exceptional skills. But what they did have, very much kind of like what the wizard said, but what they did have was that they had the awareness that those were areas of deficiency. And because they had that awareness, they surrounded themselves with the right people so that their deficiencies didn't become their downfalls.
And as far as the wisdom, develop the capacity to bring your brain, heart, and nerve together in total synergy. So many people will have one part of the equation, the nerve or the brain, and they won't have the heart. Isn't it difficult to get all of those combined in one person?
Well, it is, and that's why I think a lot of the great leaders surround themselves so that when you look at a leader, you may see an individual, but you recognize that the value that they bring through teams. And I think that's one of the things that is missing with a lot of the accolades that leaders get, that they look to single individuals. And quite often, I would say, is if you look at people that have been incredibly successful, they have had such wonderful support system in place. And the great leaders make sure that people understand that. I think the insecure leaders are the ones that hide all of that brilliance and wisdom in the background so that they can't be questioned.
Oh, yeah. Now, before we go to our break, I'd like to read for my listeners a quote from Stephen Ludden about The Leader of Oz. Is a highly readable book packed with valuable insights that will help you become the leader you were destined to be. Read the book the first time to simply enjoy the story, complete with a surprise ending. Then establish a daily practice of savoring the leadership tips at the end of each chapter. Gradually bring these tips to life in your work and truly earn the right to be called a leader. What a wonderful recommendation. How did you come up with Oz, this title?
Well, we were speaking at a conference, myself and Dr. Lakhani, and we were speaking in San Francisco. Dr. Lakhani lives in Sacramento, so we were commuting in every day. And for a three-day conference, you can imagine 5-hour commutes back and forth, you run out of things to talk about. And what we found was what we had in common was both of our favorite movies and favorite books were the Wizard of Oz. And that was the spark that that gave us the idea of why not write a book and call it The Leader of Oz. We were surprised that no one had ever done this.
Yeah.
And we came up with the idea. And
right.
We were delighted after we searched the Library of Congress to find out that no one had done it, and it gave us the opportunity to do something that came from a very long car ride into San Francisco.
Wow, that's a great story. I love that. We're going to take a break and hear about your host and another one of my sponsors. And when we come back with Dr. Kevin, we're going to talk about the importance and advantages of collaboration, which is wonderful because you just shared a great collaborative story with us. We'll be right back with Dr. Kevin Gazzara.
Have you ever met someone who was unforgettable? Someone who has touched your heart and soul? People who have faced difficult problems, people who have fearlessly shared their stories, their struggles, and their successes, people who have priceless personalities. In my new book, Priceless Personalities, Success Stories Shared by January Jones, I am honored to be able to share with you people dealing with problems such as incest, molestation, child abuse, drug abuse, polygamy, unemployment, scandal, starting over, self-esteem, and workplace issues. My guests have all been exciting, eclectic, and energizing. They will amaze, amuse, and even astonish you. You will adore getting to meet them at Amazon.com. My book is now available, 2-for-1, paperback and Kindle editions.
Do you want to learn how to live into your dreams? One Door Closes, Overcoming Adversity by Following Your Dreams. The new book by Tom Ingracia and Jared Kredimski captures the thought-provoking stories of 16 people from all walks of life who have triumphed over adversity to achieve their goals. Plus, you'll get 10 self-assessment tools to design your own blueprint for success. Unlock your true potential. Fulfill your dreams. Be inspired. One Door Closes is available from Amazon.com.
Welcome back with my guest, Dr. Kevin Gazzara, who is truly a priceless personality, and I'm thrilled to have him back with us on the show. Dr. Kevin, we were talking earlier about collaboration, which you did on your book. With the internet and the world becoming more global and complex, don't you think it's much easier now to collaborate on a lot of things?
Well, the technology makes collaboration significantly easier than it was, you know, 10 or 20 years ago. And I think the collaboration that we need to do, I think we all feel very comfortable working on our own, obviously because no one gives us any negative feedback about that. So I think it's always, it feels a little safer to just kind of do it on your own. To me, there's really four advantages of collaborating. And I think there's lots and lots of studies that support this, you know, that people kind of innovate faster, you know, in a collaborative workplace, you know, that helps you meet your goals. And it also, I think, broadens kind of your viewpoints from a global perspective, because you're getting other people's input. Mm-hmm. And particularly with technology, you can get global inputs. It doesn't have to be the person sitting next to you in a cubicle or a person in the classroom. And then the third thing is, you know, I think it helps build teams and it helps support your individual goals. And I'd say probably the last thing for collaboration that most people don't recognize is it really creates a good sense of social worth within an organization. And that retains people. And if you can retain your talent, you don't have to spend all of your time bringing in and ramping up new people.
Oh, yeah. Now, when you are out there and you want to motivate your employees, and sometimes that's difficult because people get burnout and they don't feel they're appreciated. What are some tips that you can give our listeners to keep their employees engaged?
Well, I'm going to tap into probably a good friend and an early mentor of mine, a gentleman by the name of William Daniels. And Bill wrote some amazing work. And I learned this from Bill January 29th of 1993. So it's over 20 years. And it's something that stayed with me for a very long period of time. And Bill was very simple and straightforward. But what he said was, you need to provide advice and encouragement to your employees and to other people. And although that sounds simple, the thing that he recognized is that we do this so badly. And you need to provide advice just before it can be used, not just after, because that turns into punishment. And you need to provide encouragement to people just after. So advice before, encouragement after. And that's the way people respond to it best, and they will take it in a positive way. And I found that this works not only for employees, but for any people that are parents on the line. It works equally as well for the kids, because we have a tendency to do the reverse.
We do
the encouragement up front, which becomes cheerleading, and we do the advice just after with good intentions that turns into punishment.
Oh,
so all you have to do is just switch your approach to the before and after, and you'd be amazed at the results that you will see.
This is just positively brilliant advice and encouragement that you are sharing with my listeners. It's just a matter of reversing the process. And when I hear you say it, it just makes perfect sense. But as you said earlier, we usually do it the other way around, don't we?
We always do it. In fact, that's the way we've been taught. And Bill ended with one piece of brilliance that I'll never forget. He says you have to eliminate what he called the butt sandwich. That you would deliver advice or you deliver encouragement, but you never put the two together, because the minute that you say this is a great job, but you only remember the but. And she said, you always want to make sure people are remembering the things that are going to allow them to move forward in a positive way.
Oh, wow. That's terrific, because that butt thing just stops everyone in their tracks. And I'm going to share this on my blog this week, because it is fantastic advice that you're sharing. Before we go, Kevin, could you share with us right now today what success means to you? And do you have any regrets yourself?
Well, I'll start with the second question. I absolutely have no regrets.
Okay.
I wouldn't do anything different than I have already done. You know, I've been able to, I think, develop a really well-balanced life with family and friends and mm-hmm. career. So I have no regrets, and I believe that there's a bigger plan for us, and you make of it what you are given, and that's the best way to look at life. And I would say, how I would define success, I would mm-hmm. define, I think that success needs to be defined by the individual. And I think success is much more in a kind of a balanced scorecard, if I could use some management terminology, and mm-hmm. much more in a balanced scorecard approach, where it's a balance between many different items. Could be financial, could be personal, could be family, could be education, mm-hmm. learning. Each of us has different things that motivate us. And to me, success is being able to achieve those when you want, how you want, and be able to maintain enough of a financial and a world balance so that at the end of the day, you feel like you're giving back. And the more I've always found that the more you give and the more you help others, the more wealth and success comes your way. Maybe not necessarily financially, but it certainly allows you to sleep at night in such a way that you feel content and energized to be able to get up the next day and do it again.
Oh, I love that, because it truly is a fact. The more you give, the more you get. And as you said, it comes in different forms, and you have to be open and aware. Dr. Kevin, I hope you will come back on our show. You know, we never got to talk about one of my favorite articles, Throw the Seats Off the Bus. So we will have you back and talk about that in the near future.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, January, for the opportunity, and I will look forward to reading your books as well.
Thank you. To my wonderful listeners, we hope you've enjoyed our show today. Wasn't Dr. Kevin Gazzara terrific? My upcoming guests are all exciting, eclectic, and energizing, and they will amaze and amuse and astonish you, just like Dr. Gazzara. This is the show where you hear inspiring information that will help you to become successful, too. I would love to welcome you to our wonderful, no-whining world. We love sharing our stories, our struggles, and our secrets for success. It's our hope that we can encourage all of you to emulate our guests today and every day. Now, remember my mantra, if you think it, then you can do it. So for now, dear friends, please stop with the whining and then start smiling and then start sharing our success show with everyone you know. And if that doesn't work, then start eating chocolate, lots and lots of chocolate. Again, thank you to my wonderful guest, Dr. Kevin Gazzara. This is January Jones, thanking you for joining me today on my journey and reminding you to take care and stay safe.
We want to thank you for listening to January Jones Sharing Success Story. Always remember Ms. Jones' personal mantra, if you can think it, you can do it. That's what all of our guests have done with their lives, and so can you. You are the ultimate success coach in your own life. All you need to do will be to start sharing your own story with your family and friends. We hope that our guest stories will encourage you to explore an equation in your future that will combine your creativity plus connecting with others will enable you to be successful too. Always remember, your passion plus your purpose will equal prosperity. as you explore the wonderful world of January Jones.
Yeah, I think so. Oh, those are nice. This is one from the upper room. Thank you.